Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into On Liberty by John Stuart Mill, a transformative work that explores the delicate interplay between individual liberty, societal norms, and authority. Mill combines philosophical insights with practical examples to passionately argue for the importance of personal freedom and self-determination, making a profound influence on modern liberal societies and political ideologies. John Stuart Mill stands as a cornerstone in both philosophy and economics. Recognized as one of the most significant liberal political theorists and moral philosophers, Mill has shaped much of contemporary thought with his writings, which include not only On Liberty, but also Utilitarianism, a seminal text on utilitarian philosophy. Whether you are a student of philosophy, a follower of political thought, or simply curious about the underpinnings of liberalism, On Liberty offers a critical examination of freedom's role within the confines of society and its enduring impact on the global political landscape. Join us today to unpack this masterpiece. On Liberty, the iconic political text on how to balance authority, society, and individuality. Introduction. Exploring the essence of liberty with John Stuart Mill. Imagine Victorian England, a time of rigid societal norms and an emerging dialogue about personal freedoms and governance. It was in this context that John Stuart Mill crafted On Liberty, a profound exploration of tyranny and individual freedom. His work delves deep into the question of how much power society should rightfully have over individuals. Mill's pioneering concepts form the bedrock of what we now consider liberal political philosophy, critically examining the boundaries of freedom of speech and religion. These discussions remain contentious and incredibly relevant in today's global landscape, where the tension between collective authority and individual rights frequently surfaces. Listen closely as we unfold Mill's criteria for when society can intervene in personal behaviors, such as the consequences of excessive drinking. Moreover, we'll explore why a democratic framework does not necessarily guarantee personal liberty and delve into scenarios where intervening in life-threatening situations may be justified. This discussion lays crucial groundwork not only for those looking to forge fair and well-balanced governments, but also for anyone interested in critically assessing their actions and beliefs in relation to the broader social fabric. Prepare to challenge your assumptions and gain fresh insights into the interplay of society and the individual. Part 1. Why Democracy Doesn't Ensure Absolute Freedom. Historically, the evolution of democratic governance was driven by a desire to escape the oppressive clutches of tyrannical rule. From the democratic experiments in ancient Greece to more structured governance in England, the quest to curtail the absolute power of rulers has been a common thread. Early on, strong leadership was often seen as essential for maintaining order and security. However, as time passed, it became evident that leaders, whether hereditary monarchs or conquerors, frequently pursued their own interests at the expense of their citizens. The democratic process was designed as a corrective measure, introducing a system where the governed could have a say in their governance by electing their leaders. This was meant to bridge the gap between the interests of the rulers and the ruled, theoretically eliminating the risks of tyranny. However, the reality proved more complex. Democracy, while a monumental step forward, did not inherently resolve the issues of liberty and personal freedom. Elected officials, much like ancient despots, could still infringe on individual rights and freedoms. The belief that harmonizing the interests of the rulers with those of the populace would prevent tyranny turned out to be overly optimistic. Even in a well-functioning democratic system, the threat of what Mill calls social tyranny looms large, where the majority imposes its will on the minority. For instance, if the majority were of one religious belief, they could potentially use their democratic power to oppress religious minorities. This highlights a critical insight. Democracy alone doesn't equate to individual freedom. The governance by majority does not automatically ensure self-governance, but can lead to the tyranny of the majority. Thus, the challenge remains to create mechanisms within democratic frameworks that safeguard against the potential overreach of both government and societal majorities. This is essential in preserving the essence of personal liberty amid democratic rule. Part 2. Founding Freedom on Rational Principles. To truly uphold personal liberty within a democracy, a deep and rational examination of cultural norms, shaped by historical and behavioral contexts, is essential. It is often the case that the laws and societal opinions that govern us are predominantly based on prevailing likes and dislikes, rather than on objective reasoning. This leads to a skewed understanding where customs and traditions are widely accepted without critical examination. Consider the adherence to religious practices, where behaviors such as dietary restrictions can vary dramatically based on the dominant religion of a society. A Muslim who abstains from pork due to religious reasons might, if raised in a Christian society, instead observe Lent, showcasing how cultural context rather than personal conviction often dictates behavior. Despite modern advancements, many societies have faltered in rigorously analyzing to what extent social control over individuals is justifiable. This oversight continues because the issue of personal liberty is rarely approached from a strictly rational perspective. The notable exception in this intellectual impasse is the gradual acceptance of religious tolerance. Originating more from historical needs for peace and stability rather than from enlightened thinking, religious tolerance highlights a rare breach in the otherwise irrational fabric of societal norms. This historical backdrop illustrates that without rational, objective principles defining the legitimate extent of governmental power over individuals, personal liberty cannot be assured. The reliance on unexamined social convictions and emotional responses does little to protect individual freedoms. Moving forward, the challenge lies in articulating and adopting clear, rational principles that guard personal liberty against both governmental overreach and the tyranny of the majority. But the quest remains. What exactly do these rational principles entail, and how can they be universally applied to ensure the liberty of all individuals beneath the umbrella of governmental rule? Part 3. The Dual Benefits of Personal Liberty for Individuals and Society. Imagine someone questioning the need to limit the powers of society and government. How would you convincingly argue the case for personal liberty? The debate often centers around the idea of natural rights, as proposed by philosophers like John Locke, who suggest that ethical standards emerge from inherent human rights. However, defining what is natural can be heavily influenced by the cultural context, making it a somewhat subjective basis for argument. Instead, let's turn to a more pragmatic approach by considering the utility of laws and governance. Essentially, we need to assess their overall benefits to human well-being. A society that grounds personal liberty in the principle of utility is likely to thrive because it allows individuals the freedom to develop intellectually and morally. This personal growth contributes positively to their character and overall well-being, enhancing their contributions to society. However, personal liberty isn't just a vehicle for individual development, it's crucial for societal progress too. A liberal society, where individuals are free to cultivate their unique talents and ideas, creates a vibrant tapestry of diverse thoughts and innovations. This diversity is not merely beneficial, it's essential. It fosters a dynamic environment where people can learn from one another, leveraging individual strengths for collective advancement. Historical evidence supports this view, showing that societies which embrace diversity and personal freedoms often prosper more than those which enforce conformity. Yet, this raises questions about the boundaries of personal liberty. Should individuals have the freedom to act entirely as they wish? The forthcoming discussions will delve deeper into the necessary limits and responsibilities that accompany personal freedom, exploring how they balance with the benefits to both individuals and society. Part 4. The Right to Personal Freedom. Where do we draw the line? When considering personal liberty, a fundamental belief surfaces: the notion that each individual is primarily responsible for their own well-being. As rational beings, adults are endowed with the ability to reflect deeply and make personal decisions regarding their thoughts and actions. Consequently, it is inappropriate for someone else's will to impinge upon an individual's freedom. However, a notable exception to this rule concerns children. Unlike adults, children lack the maturity and capability to make completely informed decisions. In this instance, it is deemed appropriate for adults to guide and sometimes restrict the actions of children for their own welfare. This principle extends, albeit more controversially, to societies considered less advanced. In societies where the political and cultural development may not yet support full personal liberties, some argue that a degree of authoritarian control could be justified to guide collective progress. But in more developed societies, individuals should ideally be left to determine their own desires and welfare without undue external interference. Yet conflicts arise when societal norms clash with individual actions. Often, societal members believe that adhering to specific religious or moral codes would benefit individuals' health or morality, and they may even feel personally affronted by differing lifestyles and beliefs. For instance, due to religious doctrines that forbid pork, some Muslims might feel that no one should consume pork. This was similar to the 17th century English Puritans, who sought to eliminate both public and private forms of entertainment, believing them morally harmful. While individuals in a society are free to advocate for their beliefs and attempt to persuade others, using legal or governmental force to impose these beliefs crosses the boundary of personal liberty. In modern societies, therefore, while the principle stands that individuals should be free to live as they choose, there are practical and ethical limitations to this liberty. Understanding and negotiating these limits is crucial for maintaining a balance between personal freedom and societal order. Part 5. When is it right to restrict personal liberty? In debates about freedom and societal norms, a crucial question often arises: under what circumstances is it justifiable to restrict a person's liberty? At the core of this discussion is the principle that interference is warranted only when it serves to prevent harm to the individual or to others. Take the case of alcohol consumption. While simply being drunk isn't a valid reason to restrict someone's freedoms, further action may be required if the individual becomes violent while intoxicated. In such instances, measures like fines or imprisonment might become necessary to prevent potential harm. This is based on the premise that there is a demonstrated risk of harm to others when such individuals consume alcohol. Moreover, there are situations where the omission of action can also lead to harm. For instance, it is generally accepted that individuals should be compelled to contribute to public projects that benefit society, such as the construction of hospitals or roads. These contributions ensure that vital infrastructure is maintained, indirectly preventing harm that might arise from its absence. Another aspect of this principle addresses accidents where harm is not intentional, but might occur due to ignorance or oversight. Imagine someone about to cross a bridge, unaware that it is structurally compromised. If a police officer is present and has no time to verbally warn the individual, physically stopping them from crossing becomes a necessary infringement on their liberty. This action presumes that the individual does not wish to harm themselves and acts in their best interest, aligning with the duty to prevent harm. Thus, while the value of personal liberty remains high, these scenarios illustrate that there are conditions under which society not only has the right, but perhaps the duty, to limit individual freedoms for the greater good and safety of all. Part 6. Navigating the delicate balance of harm and liberty. Determining what constitutes harm significant enough to warrant interference in personal liberty is a nuanced and complex issue. It's not every inconvenience or annoyance, such as someone taking a desired parking spot, that justifies governmental or societal intervention. So, what really qualifies as harm in the context of justifying such interference? The threshold for interference is typically reached when an individual's actions harm others through the violation of a clear societal obligation. For example, while general public may enjoy the liberty to consume alcohol, this liberty does not extend to on-duty police officers, whose responsibility is to ensure public safety. Obligations toward family also illustrate this point. Society might not prevent someone from engaging in drinking or gambling, but if these behaviors result in neglect of familial responsibilities, then they could be considered offenses warranting intervention. However, the concept of preventing harm isn't always straightforward. Take the sale of potentially harmful substances like poisons. These products could cause harm or even death if misused, raising the question of whether their sale should be restricted. Yet, the potential for harm does not immediately necessitate an infringement on liberty, as this approach could be misused and might overlook the potential benefits such liberties provide, such as employment opportunities and economic activity related to the sale of these products. To address concerns like poison abuse, rather than restricting sales outright, a more balanced approach could involve preventative measures, such as educational campaigns or regulations that track the purchase of potentially dangerous substances. Deciding what qualifies as harm and the appropriate measures to prevent it involves a careful consideration of both the direct impact of actions and the broader implications of restricting freedoms. As we move forward, our discussion will shift from the freedoms associated with specific actions to the broader, sometimes more abstract, freedoms that concern ideas and expressions. This shift underscores the complexity and breadth of the concept of liberty. Part 7: Why Preserving the Freedom of Thought and Speech is Crucial for Humanity's Quest for Truth. In contemporary society, the protection and respect for freedom of thought and speech might seem like a given, but the underlying reasons for their paramount importance warrant a deeper examination. Historically, people have shown a tendency to align with the prevailing opinions of their social circles or to accept the dictations of institutional authorities, such as religious organizations or political parties, as indisputable truths. This uncritical acceptance poses a significant barrier to genuine knowledge and understanding. No individual or authority is infallible. To truly navigate towards truth, it is essential that every person has the unfettered freedom to think independently and voice their opinions. Suppressing these freedoms stifles debate and discussion, which are fundamental for the advancement of knowledge and consequently for the betterment of humankind. Consider the historical example of Socrates, whose contributions to philosophy are invaluable. His execution highlights a grim period when society chose to silence what it perceived as threatening ideas rather than engaging with them. This suppression of thought not only ended the life of a great thinker, but also delayed philosophical progress. Moreover, it's crucial to understand that the value of an opinion does not solely rest on its accuracy. Opinions that diverge from the mainstream can still contribute valuable perspectives and catalyze discussions that bring us closer to understanding complex truths. Take Isaac Newton's theories, for instance. While not entirely correct, had they been suppressed due to their initial contradiction with established beliefs, significant scientific progress that followed from his ideas might have never occurred. This raises a pertinent question. What about opinions that are evidently incorrect? Should the freedom to express such views be upheld to the same extent? Exploring this question helps us underline the delicate balance between promoting free expression and navigating the landscape of truth and falsity. Part 8: The Unexpected Value of False Opinions in Society. It's common to encounter opinions that seem outright erroneous, particularly on contentious topics like abortion or gender equality. There's often a reflexive desire to wish those with such views would simply remain silent. However, does suppressing these opinions serve the greater good of society? The answer, perhaps surprisingly, is no. Allowing the articulation of incorrect or unpopular opinions serves a critical function. It compels society to scrutinize and reassess its established beliefs. This process is vital for a society truly committed to the pursuit of truth, as it prevents the passive acceptance of ideas simply because they are endorsed by authorities or are predominant. Take the issue of gender equality as an illustrative example. It's insufficient to uphold these principles merely because they are enshrined in law. We must also understand and articulate why these rights are justified and important. Encounters with opposing views force us to defend and rationalize our stance on equal rights, reinforcing the foundational reasons for these beliefs. Moreover, if conventional wisdom is never challenged, it risks becoming dogma, accepted on face value rather than understood and embraced for cogent reasons. To maintain the vitality and relevance of our deepest convictions, they must be continually tested against dissenting opinions. This ongoing discourse prevents our moral and ethical beliefs from devolving into mere customs, stripped of their compelling philosophical or rational bases, thus safeguarding freedom of thought and speech, even when the ideas expressed seem misguided or false, is not just a matter of principle but of practical necessity for a dynamic, reflective society. Through this lens, even the most controversial or flawed opinions can catalyze deeper understanding and more robust justifications of our most cherished beliefs. Final summary: John Stuart Mill's exploration in On Liberty underscores a critical takeaway. The norms and customs shaped by culture and society do not inherently safeguard personal liberties within a democratic framework. Instead, the effectiveness of a democracy in protecting these freedoms hinges on the application of rational principles. For both individuals and society to truly prosper, it is essential that behaviors and regulations are assessed and governed not by fleeting cultural trends or the majority's preferences, but by objective reasoning. These rational principles enable a fair evaluation of which actions should be permitted, ensuring that the liberty of the individual is balanced with the well-being of the community. This approach fosters a society where both personal and collective growth are attainable. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.